Welcome to Through the Telebox with George
and Jessica.
What?
Well, we have some big news to talk about today.
We do.
First on the list here is George got engaged.
I did. There
Yay.
It is.
Okay. And Super Bowl was last night.
It was.
There was the trailer for Stranger Things 2.
And starting in Halloween, or this Halloween.
Super excited.
I know.
Oh my gosh, I can't even wait.
And many other trailers as well for the movies and Logan. And I can't wait for the Logan movie.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yes, big news that we have for you guys. Like Jessica said, yes, I am engaged. I proposed to my fiance New Year's Day, and it was exciting. And we're already planning on getting married May 20th.
Wow, that's fast.
Yes, it is. part of the reason was just want to, you know, get it all done and
get it over with before you change your mind. And no.
There's no changing our mind, but just get it all done. So we're getting that going.
Which is awesome. I'm very happy for you guys.
Oh, thank you.
A little sad that we're losing the single demographic. I was really banking on, like, I'd bring the wit and the humor. You brought the looks. And then...
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But yeah, it's definitely good times. What else?
Last episode, if you guys were listening, George and I had a little debate about when Rick loses his hand.
That's right.
He does lose his hand via the governor.
That is right.
And has to learn to shoot with his left hand after that.
Yes.
So anyway, I just wanted to...
So you were correct.
I just want to bring that up in the big news. Also, we need a theme song. Any musically talented people that want to put together a little theme for us.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more big picture, like a symphony. So if you could get
symphony. Let's just gather, you know, Hans Zimmerman and create a whole symphonic intro for us. That'll be great.
So what else? Oh, I bought some really cool, interesting books that maybe we could discuss today for the topic. We're talking again about The Walking Dead, kind of a little recap and... Before the season premiere, February 12th, next Sunday, you guys, so be prepared to tune in. The tagline is Rise Up.
So that's right. That's right.
We're going to see some amazing, I don't know, a couple battles? Just one big war? One big battle? I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out as the show
we
progresses.
We shall see. I know, but we shall see. But yes, it'll be definitely... A pretty big battle. And basically what we're planning on doing with this episode today is we're just going to go ahead and just wrap up the rest of the episodes for the first half of the season as much as we possibly can. And we're also going to go kind of deep in thought in some of the philosophy behind it.
Yeah, some of the books that I bought, I didn't even know these existed till I went to the bookstore.
Me either.
And I was kind of surprised. There's a whole section on pop culture and psychology and pop culture and philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So like there was, you know, in this section, there was books on, you know, Harry Potter and philosophy, Star Wars and, you know, philosophy. And so they had all these genres. Batman, you know, pretty much anything you could think of.
Mm.
And they had one in the psychology section, The Walking Dead and Psychology. And then they also had Walking Dead and Philosophy.
Mm.
And so it looks at the show. And this is what we never really got to talk about what we loved most about this show.
Everything.
For me, For me, I love that it's about these characters. It's about this journey. I think what's kind of really cool and unique about a zombie apocalypse as a setting for a story is that it's fictional. Like, it doesn't seem realistic that something could be, alive and dead. And so it allows the audience and the writers to kind of grapple and play with basic, you know, human condition and let us explore that darker side of humanity without there being too much emotional involvement. Because a lot of the things that you can talk about when we're having discussion about whether zombies are alive or dead and whether they deserve human dignity and those types of philosophical questions. Right. You can talk about it in this fictional world, and then you can take what you talk about and apply it to real life situations. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love.
Right. And before we even started this podcast, we were having a discussion of just the different philosophers where the creators of Walking Dead, where they got their philosophy from, which brought together the setting and everyone's personalities for each character. A few of the philosophers, for example, definitely the father of philosophy, Socrates, and his ideas of, he taps into the idea of our cognitive and conscience state of mind, where we have that ability, that free will, to choose good or evil, whether we should fight or whether we should run away or whether we should do something right or do something wrong.
Help a fellow survivor or right. more than.
And so he taps into that quite a bit. So much to the point where he gets to the idea that there possibly is a God. In my opinion, there is a God. And so, but he never reaches that level. And in one of his works, he actually quotes, you know, maybe there is a higher being out there that gives us this ability to think and reason behind whether we should do something right or do something wrong.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point, because in the philosophy book, Walking Dead and Philosophy, they discuss what makes a person a person. They touch on that there seems to be this physical aspect of us, a body, but there is a general belief that there is something more. Mm-hmm. That, and they, you know, in psychology, it's called consciousness. We can't explain how we think about something and how we come to an answer of true and false. And so in that aspect, there is this other non-physical part, it would appear, that it still can't be explained. And the question is, what if science gets to where they can explain how that happens?
Right.
Will they? You know, it's very interesting.
It is. And then, you know, one of the other philosophers is Plato, who happens to be one of Socrates' students, who later on, Plato kills Socrates. but anyways, Plato comes up with the idea of pies in the sky, and he takes all of his teachings from Socrates and warps them to a very strange way of thinking. Basically, you know, his idea of pies in the sky, he refers them as pies, as, you know, these thoughts that, you know, brainstorming. You come up with a thought that, okay, for example, I'm gonna take a stroll through the park. Okay, he uses it as a pie as an example, that it's something sweet, you know, something that you look forward to doing. And he applies that even to, let's say, a serial killer. He has intentions on killing someone. And so his thoughts are obviously like pies as well. It's sweet to him. He has the intention of hurting someone. And Plato's eyes, he finds that, well, hey, if that's what he wants to do, then that's what he wants to do. That anyone can be whatever they want to be. There's really no wrong in any of it, that everyone plays their part in society, that there is going to be good, that there is going to be evil, and there's nothing we can truly do about it. You just kind of cope with it, which is kind of a warped way of thinking. and then Aristotle goes in more into the spiritual sense of humans, and that there is a spiritual realm outside of our physical realm, and kind of tapping that into The Walking Dead, do zombies have a spirit? You know, I mean, yes, they're dead, but is there the possibility that is the humanly spirit still alive and mm-hmm. stuck in a dead corpse, mm-hmm. A rotting corpse, kind of like a purgatory for that person? And they obviously have no control of that physical body anymore because it's dead. So is that person, or is there still a part of that person still in mm-hmm. the zombie?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the dilemma some of the characters really face mm-hmm. at the very first couple seasons. You know, Morgan has difficulty shooting his wife. She seems to You know, it appears that she seems to recognize the area. She keeps coming to the house. She tries to use the doorknob. So there's that question of, is there some remnants of her left? And obviously, being alive, we feel something. Like Amy, with Andrea and Amy, when her sister gets bitten, you know, she waits for her to pass. And as she's being reanimated, is like talking to her and looking for something that she's still there. And, you know, sadly, Amy just tries to eat Andrea, and she obviously has to kill her sister. And so it is that difficulty of what makes a human being a human being.
Yeah.
Because the physical part, especially in a zombie apocalypse, is that's gone. They are dead. They're reanimated somehow, which is impossible, but, you know, they're reanimated. And so the physical part seems to be there, but time and time again, the characters will say, you know, they're not there anymore.
Right. And I think the show has done a good job of expressing that, because the times that they thought that their loved one was still possibly in that body, you see that they're not, because the zombie automatically wants to eat them. And they're left with no other choice but to kill them. So, but it still does leave the possibility that maybe they are, but they just have no control of their body anymore. So we don't know, but it is an interesting thought.
Yeah. And it gets really interesting too, because then it depends on how you treat the zombie. Like they were talking about Kant, another philosopher,
and his
perspective. I said Kant? Kant, tomato, tomato, potato, potato. Actually, I wonder if you gave someone the lyrics who didn't know that song, I wonder if they would read it. You say potato, I say potato, you say tomato,
I
say
tomato. I think it's Kant, Immanuel Kant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, he brings up, you know, from his point of view, you know, all human beings deserve moral respect. Mm-hmm. And since zombies are residual human beings, they used to be and now they're reanimated, that they also deserve moral respect and human dignity. And it's kind of interesting because we do that with our own loved ones. We honor their wishes. Mm-hmm. We legally honor wills and things like that. And so they kind of explore that in the philosophy book about how we treat then zombies.
There is some sort of respect for them as well.
And definitely from Rick's group. But then it gets eerie when you talk about, like, for Merle, where he will hunt zombies for fun. The governor sets up, you know, like this gladiator situation with zombies. It's like a sporting thing. Mm-hmm. Negan seems to use the zombies as a tool, as a weapon. And so they obviously have no respect for this residual humanity in the zombies. And it also plays into how they respect actual individuals that are living. So, you know, Negan doesn't really seem to respect human life, whether you're alive or dead.
He just doesn't care.
And that's what's cool about the psychology, but, you know, uses Gareth and Negan and some of these, and the governor and Rick, and looks at the psychology behind their actions, and are they sociopaths, and how has this environment brought those characteristics out, and do they meet the criteria as what we would call a sociopath in this day and age now? So it's really interesting if you read them side by side. So if you're into that kind of delving in deeper into the psychology and the philosophy of the show, I totally recommend it. It's a really good, interesting read. I finished the psychology book, and I'm about one third through the philosophy book.
What are the books called again?
So it's a Psych of the Living Dead, The Walking Dead Psychology. It's by Travis Langley. And then The Walking Dead and Philosophy, Zombie Apocalypse Now. And it's edited by Wayne Yoon?
Yeah.
I think that's how you say his last name. And they have different authors write different chapters. So it's kind of... And you don't have to read it start to finish. You can pick the ones that you want to read.
And you were saying too earlier that The Walking Dead and Philosophy book strictly sticks to the series, right?
Yes. So I noticed through when I'm reading the Walking Dead and Psychology book, it jumps between the comic and the television series. Mm-hmm. And they actually do a little spoiler alert as to, you know,
this season.
About, because the comics, yeah. If you,
right.
Yeah. And with the philosophy book, they've been strictly sticking to the television series, which is kind of nice because that's where my big base is. I've only read in the comics, I've only read up to when the prison gets destroyed.
Right.
So for me, it was easier to follow because I just watched the show.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to check that out, definitely, you know, just go to your local bookstore and check it out.
It's a great jumping off point. Like, when you're talking with people who are like, oh, gross, I hate The Walking Dead, it's too violent. And I'm like, you're missing the
more
point.
to just the goriness and the sadness. And, you know, because there are people that say, oh, you watch The Walking Dead, you know, it's so violent. I mean, yes, it's a violent show, but there's so much more to it than just that. There's a deeper thought and essence about it behind the storyline and it's behind each character as well. Yeah. And that's what's so great about the creators of The Walking Dead is that they really tap deeply into the philosophical and psychological sense of the story.
Yeah, the psychology book talks about the Maslow's hierarchy of human beings, how we all need, you know, at the base we need food, water, shelter, safety, and then we can progress up towards self-actualization and art and things like that. And they talk about that. They talk about PTSD, the effects of fear and stress on the human being and what that does to their psyche and how that plays out in the show and the characters. There's definitely a lot of people are pissed off at Carol's character because she's just kind of isolated herself. And each character has struggled with, you know, PTSD
and they have to understand, the viewers have to understand, is that she is going through her transformation just like all the other characters have been going through theirs. I seriously see Carol rising up these next couple of episodes coming up.
I think she's a strong character. She's going to recover and she's going to find a balance and a peace, because the weight of taking a human life, even if it's a reanimated dead person, or having to make that choice, you know, to kill or be killed for survival, that whole flight and fight or flight response that human beings have, that's a huge weight. And soldiers, even though they make, you know, maybe they feel like they're justified in shooting an enemy, that is still a huge weight on them. And they really do struggle with PTSD. Right. And these characters have to struggle with it as well, except they have no one to help them. There's no, you know, you're left to your own devices in the zombie apocalypse. There's no psychological therapy you're going to go get, besides maybe a book, like when Norman Reedus's character, Daryl, finds that, you know, child abuse book when he's with Carol. And like he has to process, he has to process all those things from his previous life as well as the stuff that's going on in the apocalypse. And Carol, too, she has a lot of issues that she has from being in an abusive relationship with her husband. And so both these characters have grown and transformed tremendously, but there's still that struggle of the choices that they've made and how can we maintain our humanity.
It's a huge burden on all of them. The PTSD is extremely strong, especially in apocalyptic setting. And kind of going back to that fight or flight deal, one of the other philosophers that they use as far as ideas to create the story is Friedrich Nietzsche. He came up with the idea of the original Superman. He was the first one to come up with that thought that if you were to think extremely hard that you could go through a wall, you could do it. Or if you were to think extremely hard that you can jump off a cliff and fly, it's possible. That whole be all you can be, or you know, you can achieve a higher goal or situation.
To some extent, I think that's true. Like we were talking, I mean, obviously you're restricted by the nature of your being. Obviously we can't fly. We don't have wings.
Can't go through a wall. I mean, yes, you can probably punch through a wall. Yes.
And to an extent, with the power of your mind, you do see like martial artists that can punch through,
like Bruce Lee,
a layer of concrete.
It is possible, but there are some consequences, and no, we cannot become like Superman, Man of Steel, but you can use some of that idea to overcome certain battles.
Well, Nietzsche also, I think it was Nietzsche, his philosophical idea in text is he comes up with this idea of, it's almost like, I was reading in another book for Stephen King's, the movie that's coming out about the Dark Tower series, and how Roland, the main character, gets stuck in this cycle where he has to relive his life. And so Nietzsche's whole idea is to like live a life that's worth living, and you have the power to create the life you want.
Yeah.
So if you want a life that's full of happiness and full of success, create it. Like, you have the ability to do that. And I like that thought, because then we have the power to create the world that we want.
Kind of like a utopia. Amazing.
Yeah.
In that sense.
And we can, so because human beings have this dual identity where we can be both good and evil, cowardice and courageous, honest or false, you know, we have the ability to be both those things. And so we have the ability to make the world really horrible and awful, or we have the ability to make it really great and really wonderful.
Pleasant.
And the only thing standing in the way is us.
Ourselves.
Making that choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It all goes back to our free will. The ability to, whether we want to do something right or do something wrong. And
in The Walking Dead, another thing that I find just so amazing about it is how do you, in this darkest point in, you know, human evolution, when they reach this point, like, how do you find hope and purpose? Because the characters do. I mean, each character, as they're dealing with PTSD, they're finding a purpose and a reason to live and survive.
Right. Some find hope in God. Others find hope, like, for example, Rick. There was a time where he became a farmer. Mm-hmm. And he found some hope in that.
Yeah,
that
in rebuilding
civilization. Right. And then and his teaching son. His son to mm-hmm. be a farmer as well for a short time. And those little things play a pretty strong impact on those characters. Because, again, they're dealing with the outside darkness of what's going on outside in the world, along with their PTSD. And so when Rick lost his wife, Lori, you know, he suffered quite a bit, and he went through a pretty dramatic time with the PTSD. And then he found hope when Herschel helped him get his mind off of that by teaching him how to farm. And then from there, he was teaching Carl. But of course, Carl, so young, he's all about, and he's, of course, growing up really fast. He's all about, you know, no, we need to keep surviving. Mm-hmm. We need to keep making our fortress stronger, and we need to go get more supplies, and we need to keep shooting zombies and this mm-hmm. and that. And he didn't want anything to do with the farming in the beginning. After a while, he started to like it a little bit.
Well, I think, too, that we were talking about the male narrative.
Oh, yeah.
Of how that plays effect in Carl wanting to prove himself as a man. Mm,
the masculinity.
And having to grow up very quickly in this world to survive. Mm-hmm. And they do reward him for learning how to shoot and, you know, learning how to protect the others. He does get rewarded in that male sense.
Yeah.
But as we saw in the prison, it also has some scary side effects where we're teaching him to be tough and strong, but he also has no emotion. He doesn't know how to describe things and, you know, shoots this fellow kid that attacked the prison without any sense of remorse. And so, I don't know. It's just interesting to see that playing out, because you can see it play out in real life situations, and then you see it play out, obviously, in this fictional universe, because it's not going to change. There's still people with a background and still human beings. They're going to react in a human way.
They are. Because, again, we're not Superman. Mm-hmm. We're human. And we have emotions. Mm-hmm. And we have cognitive thinking. We have a conscience. And with all of these things coming together, we realize we're just a little speck on the earth surrounded with, you know, in their setting, complete madness of zombies roaming around. Mm-hmm. And it's horrifying. It's frightening. It's exhausting as well. The thought in your mind that you have to survive every day and whether I'm going to make it the next day. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting, not only mentally, but physically and emotionally. And so it plays a huge toll on each of the characters, which is why, as we see each episode and the seasons play out, that they're going through transitions mm-hmm. of, you know, like Carol, you know, she was strong in the beginning and just fighting. And then and proved to be a possible strong leader,
a warrior, really.
And then all of a sudden to just breaking down and secluding herself and mm-hmm. doesn't want anything to do with anybody. And then Morgan as well. You know, he was this.
He lost his mind when his son got killed and really blamed himself because he didn't shoot his wife, who ended up eating his son.
Yeah.
So.
And he created all those booby traps.
He isolated himself. Yeah. He lost touch with reality for a minute there.
Then found some redemption a little bit with running into that one guy that taught him the
art of kung fu.
Yeah. God, I can't remember the name. But anyways, so he finds redemption in learning Aikido, which is the art of peace, a type of martial arts. That Eastman, when he runs into him at his cabin, he teaches him that. And that's when Morgan decides to gathers his insanity, or his sanity, excuse me, and finds peace in that. And then realizes that, you know, I'm not just killing zombies, I'm also killing humans as well in order to survive. And so that's when he makes, you know, the aggressive decision to only kill zombies and anyone that's an actual human, to give them another chance, that he strongly believes that that everybody deserves a second chance, mm-hmm. that they have the ability to possibly change and be a better person. And he does that with one of the young guys in the wolves.
Because he's a forensic psychologist, Eastman is. And so he had a terrible tragedy that happened in the real world. As you come to find out, he actually murdered that murderer that got his family. That's why he created the cabin. And that's where he was when the zombie apocalypse broke out. And so
He slowly murdered him. He kept him in the little prison cell that he created in the cabin and just left him there to starve and slowly die.
Yeah. So he's already kind of gone through that journey with himself, so he's able to help Morgan come back. And you're right, it is a story of redemption. And even Rick, he asks Herschel at one point, like, how do we come back from this? Like, so it is that story of how do we keep our humanity in the most dire of situations, which I love. Because then, like I was saying, it's a fictional setting, but we get to, as an audience member, get to explore our own thoughts about the human condition and our own thoughts about how we keep our humanity in the real world. And it's, I don't know, that's my favorite part about the whole series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same here.
Yay. So what would be like a survival tip you would give
to our audience?
Yeah. We should do a survival tip like once a week. We just be like, here's your tip of the week. Why do you think? I can tell you which one I would do. My little survival trick. If a horrible disaster happens.
Try not choking on popcorn.
No. How to get fresh water. So when all the horribleness is going down, before like city infrastructure and everything fails, you have to fill up every sink and your bathtub with water. So you have a fresh water supply to use. Also, little fun fact here. I'm going to survive for a little bit. I don't know. I'll eventually die because I'm not fit. But what's that movie where he goes? Oh, Zombieland, where he goes cardio, cardio, cardio.
No, that's right. It's all about
cardio. The world number one right there. And
he makes a very good point. Yes. You do need that cardio because you're running from zombies.
Yes. Yeah. So I will die. But while I'm trapped in my house for a little while, I'll live. The back up. Okay. So, you know, like in a toilet, you have that tank. And that's where the water flows in that goes down to flush when you pull the little lever.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That tank is clean water. Like, you could take it and then, like, well, you'd boil it. I mean, let's be a little safe. But it's clean. Not the one in the bowl, but the tank. So you can live off of that water for a little bit, too.
You could.
This is a survival situation, George. It can't be picky. Anyway, so those are my two little survival tips is fill up all your bathtub with water.
All you had was mayonnaise.
That's gross.
That is gross. I would die.
Because the fridge is, the power's going to go out, so that's going to be bad. That's going to go bad very quickly.
Yeah.
No, what you need, there actually is, it's not for a zombie apocalypse, you know, mind you, but there is a, American Red Cross has this. It was kind of creepy because they handed these out at work.
We could live off of Twinkies.
Twinkies. Yes. But they have a list. It's like 21 weeks to prepare. And it's for...
this is like from the American Red Cross?
Yes, yes. And so it's for any situation like, I don't know, like Hurricane Katrina or some natural disaster.
Mm-hmm. El Nino.
this will get you through probably like the first 3 days to a week of surviving.
Yes, it is.
So like week one, it tells you, you know... Like, put away a gallon of water, a jar of peanut butter, a box of crackers, and, like, two boxes of, like, nutrition bars.
That's a lot for week one.
Yeah, and so every week you...
Tour your home to gather items you already have. Place all items in a waterproof bag or container before packing in kit. Check off each item as you go. A sturdy, easy-to-carry container to hold items. For example, backpack, duffel bag, or large tote. A set of clothes and sturdy shoes for each family member. Copies of important papers, birth certificates, ID, la-da-da-da-da, passports, etc. A 3-day supply of your medications. Okay. A current list of family phone numbers and emails, including someone who can be reached at local lines. That's a good one because our phones could go down. Yeah. Not gonna be any,
I don't have,
lines,
I have like maybe towers. 3 phone numbers memorized. Do you remember like as a kid?
Yeah, we were able to remember all kinds of phone numbers. I can't even remember my own
sometimes.
Those old
people. We were like when I was a kid. We had a rotary phone. No, my grandma actually did have a rotary phone. But yeah, like you'd have to get the phone and you have to sit and talk in the kitchen because... It wasn't wireless. Like, you had to sit and, like, gossip with your girlfriends.
Hmm. I like how the entire, like, first week is 1 gallon of water. 1 gallon of water. 1 gallon of
That's
water.
That's going to be your biggest thing.
It is. Because
you can survive a long time without food. Not, it's not healthy. You're not going to feel good. You're going to feel very sluggish and fatigued.
But our body
But you can't survive very long without water.
Water.
You can go maybe 3-4 days. So...
I like how they give...
That's why my survival tip is the best, because I'm going to get you guys hydrated with your tub water.
And toilet water.
And toilet water.
Hey, you know, in a post-apocalyptic setting, you'll be down to have anything.
Because when you think about it, like, so the chaos is going to happen. Let's say it's a zombie apocalypse, right? The chaos is going to happen. You're in a big city. You can't get out. Traffic. All the roads are blocked. Mm-hmm. So if you can hold up for a good week or two, let everything calm down, you'd have a better chance, I think, then of booking it. First off, you got to have a kit ready and get out of the city.
Right.
I think that's first and foremost.
Backpack, duffel bag, you know, put your first aid kit in there.
Which is why California, when we were talking about like what state would do the best, California has too many big cities. You have San Francisco, San Diego, LA. Like, if you live in those areas, you're not going to do very well. But if you live like in the mountain areas, I think you'll have a good chance.
Give it a good chance because you're secluded.
Yeah.
There's not that many people.
Yeah. What state was the worst?
State that was the worst was...
Washington?
You know what? We didn't
figure it out. We found out what state was the best. Montana. Which makes sense because it's not heavily populated.
Right.
Not they have harsh winters. You have to kind of be tough and know how to
survive
the land. The
harsh winters. You know, those zombies are going to, I don't think they could
do
too
so.
Well, you know, with the snow. And so that would be a good place to try to survive because we too have to think about the harsh winters for ourselves and trying to stay warm.
I think the valley would be a good place to survive because you get a lot of farmland. You got grapes. You got all the fruit trees.
Yeah, we could.
Do
totally
have some people that do
here.
Cattle? You know, you could get a little. You can get some chickens and a coop, and I don't know. You could. So you can
get
make
some
a good living here.
Chickens and a coop.
Darn tootin'.
Darn tootin'. Better hold on to your keister. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any like secret survival tips?
Trauma shears are nice.
Oh, yeah.
I have some of those.
George works, we're both in healthcare, and George works in an ER. And so his big thing, he was super excited to get these
trauma shears.
Trauma shears to rip their clothes off right away.
They're the raptor shears from.
How are they going to help you survive though in the zombie apocalypse? You can cut off the clothes off the zombies.
Exactly. You can cut the clothes off. But they're multi-tooled. They also have a thing to break glass, or a windshield, so like if you, like, let's say the door locked into a car and you need to like try to get in there, just crack that there open, they also have a seatbelt cutter on them in case you zombies are coming and you can't get the seatbelt off,
Do you have them on you all the time?
I usually do.
Oh, okay.
I usually do.
So you pulled up to a trauma accident, you mm-hmm. could get some people out.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's pretty cool.
I have a little thing in my car. It's kind of like a little hammer, but it's for breaking windows. Like if you were to get, go off into a canal and your car's filling up with water.
Right. There was one time where.
And it has a thing where you can cut your seatbelt too.
I actually had to cut the seatbelt to somebody. I had to break the window and cut the seatbelt for somebody.
Really?
I was on my way to go meet up with my fiance to do this paint and sip wine kind of thing at Pino's Palette. And there was an accident that just happened. It happened like maybe seconds before I even got to them. And they were right there in the middle of the intersection. And so I pulled up in front of them.
On Herndon, huh?
Yeah.
God, Herndon's the worst.
Herndon's the worst, yeah. And I pulled up in front of the car that was hit. And I put my hazard lights on to stop any other incoming traffic. So this way they catch the flashing lights. Mm-hmm. Ran out of my car and saw that there was a passenger still in there. The door, and they were unconscious. And so the door was locked. I tried all the other doors. They were all locked. So I was like, well, I'm going to break the window then.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and used my handy dandy little trauma shears and cracked it open. Cut the seatbelt open. I don't know. Like, I probably could have just, released
this. You really wanted to test.
I
test
really wanted. I was like, broke the window. May as well get the seatbelt too.
You guys have like a checklist in the ER who's used what on their scissors.
We do, because like, oh, wait, have you used that one yet? Oh, I haven't used that one yet. No.
Get like a special award. Yeah.
So I just wanted to just cut it and check the patient's pulse and everything. They had a pulse. They were just,
knocked out.
Yeah. I dragged the patient from the car to the sidewalk, and there was people already around. And I said, yelled out to one of the guys, said, "Hey, call 911." And I was looking around for the other car, and I saw the other car was like 100 feet away.
But on that, actually, not to interrupt your story, but I witnessed a friend, like after finals and our last finals for nursing, and we were hanging out at our friend's house out in the country, like out in like
the boonies.
Yeah, 180 in California, like out there. And she turned and didn't see this other car coming, and this car hit her on the side. Well, they went off to one side. Her car, so I heard it. I didn't actually visually see it, but I heard it. And I go and I like turn on my headlights. It's pitch dark out there. There's no lights out there. And I see this van, and it's like in these orange trees, and people are coming out, and they're like stumbling around, they've just been in an accident. And I can't find my friend's.
Coming out like zombies.
I can't find my friend's car. And I'm like, she wouldn't just drive away. Like, there's no way she like did a hit and run and take off. But I call 911 and I'm like, there's an accident. There's only one vehicle that I could see. Well, her vehicle went on the other side of the road. Like you said, about like 100 feet, went like down this ditch thing and then up again. And she had this huge, so when the fire truck showed up, they had the big light and they could search and they saw her vehicle. So they went to help her. But she was knocked unconscious too. She had this huge goose egg on her head from hitting the side of the window.
Right.
Oh, but it's scary because I felt bad because they were all fine. They were all getting up and walking. And I was like, where's my friend?
Yeah.
And I felt so bad that I didn't see, like, because you're panicked. Like, you're not thinking clearly to look around. And I didn't have a flashlight and it's pitch black out there. And so.
Wow.
Yeah.
I right away turned on my light on my phone. And I was checking, because when I went to go check the other car, the driver, he was already out of his car and he was talking to some people. And I went over to him and I was like, hey, I was like, who's the driver of this vehicle? And he raised his hand, and I was like, are you okay? Are you hurt? And he's like, I'm just, he had some little scratches here and there. And I checked his eyes that they were dilated. And that was, so I just kind of did the little flash thing, and he was totally fine.
Yeah,
and,
good.
And I told him where I was from. I told him I work at a hospital. And, and so, he was fine. And I said, whose fault was it? And he, you know, he politely said it was him. And he said, it was me. And I can smell from his car weed. It was just strong. And I can smell it off of him. So I was like, okay. Yeah. I see now.
Slower reaction.
Yeah. Times. The good thing was he didn't try to drive away. You know, he admitted.
That's the worst thing you can do in that situation.
Yeah. So, so anyways, then the cops were there pretty quick.
And everybody was okay? And
everybody else was okay. Yeah. I just, there's people did coming around. Did, and I was just it told a female in
the
other back.
Vehicle? Did they end up waking up and they were okay?
She did.
Okay.
She did.
Yeah, our friend ended up, once the paramedics were like rousing her, she woke up and was able to get out of the car. And,
yeah. I went back to her and I did a sternal rub. And she slowly started waking up, and then the cops were coming.
Yeah.
And then ambulance was already on their way. And what was funny was the cops were starting to get my license plate down. And I was like, no.
I'm not in it.
I was like, I wasn't involved. I just parked my car right here, you know, to stop traffic.
Yeah.
And the cop was like, that's a pretty smart idea.
Yeah. You did a really good job. Like, you kept your cool and you like,
And so he was like, not bad, you know. And so he goes, all right, thank you. You know, I was like, cool.
Yeah. Got I did back a in my horrible car job. I totally like tunnel vision, like did not look around at my surroundings. Like,
oh, that's like the first thing I do. I was like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, okay, what am I looking at? Boom, boom, I'm looking at my surroundings. And I was like, okay, I see glass. I see this. I see cars hit right there. There's a person. Looks like there's a person still in there. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to quickly park my car right in the middle of the intersection to block that car. And to block other cars surrounding, so they can see my hazard lights and they don't, you know, because it was dark.
More accidents,
it was dark and it was raining. Yeah. And so it was quite the experience.
Good job, George.
I
took an EMT class when I was 18, and that's the first they tell you to like survey the scene, because sometimes when you pull into like accidents, there could be like knocked down power lines and there's electricity, and you know, so you run into like. Our chemical truck could be knocked over, and now there's a hazardous chemical that you have to control too. And so,
I have another story.
And so, oh my gosh, George.
But we can say that for another time.
So yeah, no, that's really good.
Yeah.
So, but that's what stress does. Great, another. They should pay me for advocating this book. No. They talk about what stress does, and even like the best like. Daryl or Rick could get so inundated and stressed out and be so fatigued that they could easily, like in movies when you're like, oh, that character's so badass. Like, how did they get eaten by the zombie? That's ridiculous. But
they don't
that
think.
Does, that does happen to your body. You get
like I was
so
saying before,
out.
You get it will wear you out.
Yeah. And you get tunnel vision and you get exhausted. And so you don't see what's happening over here.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would if you were not.
You're not totally focused on the surroundings. Yeah. You're just focused on. What's in front of you, and but it's not your fault, it's just the fact that you're exhausted physically and mentally and you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, you're trying to survive. And so that pretty much wraps up our episode
good,
for today.
Good conclusion.
Yeah,
we'll have to think of more survival tips for next week, and
most definitely. And I will definitely
send me that symphony.
Yeah, and I will definitely bring up another story. I got another survival story that I experienced with another car accident. And so,
Be safe out there, people. Enjoy the season premiere this Sunday.
Indeed. And we definitely look forward to Stranger Things as well. As soon as Stranger Things starts up in
we'll
the second
season.
We'll
have to do a recap of the whole first season before second season launches.
Yes.
So look forward to that. That's going to be
That'll
so
be fun.
Good.
I know. I'm excited.
So many amazing shows out there.
So again, guys, thank you. And again, this is Through the Telebox with George.
And Jessica.
All right. See ya.
Take care. Till next week.
Till next week.